This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about immigration law. I am here today with barrister Mr. Alexander Swain from 10 King's Bench Walk Chambers in London. Having been awarded a Master's in International Human Rights, Alexander is highly experienced in immigration and asylum law, and he frequently advises and represents parties in the First Tier Tribunal, Upper Tribunal, High Court and in the Court of Appeal. Alexander is also an Associate Lecturer on the Bar Professional Training Course at the University of the West of England. Thank you for joining us, Alex.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great area of law to be talking about today. Lots and lots of people are questioning what's going on with immigration law, what with Brexit happening and all of this sort of stuff. But we're going to start from the top, aren't we? So Our first question, the most frequently asked question that we've had from the top is, what is meant by immigration law? What do we mean by that?
Well, immigration law in the United Kingdom is governed by the Immigration Act 1971. That was an act which established that the Home Office, the Secretary of State, decides when a non-British national can come into the United Kingdom, how long they can stay here for, and on what basis. Section 1 of the 1971 Act established that power of the Secretary of State. The 1971 Act also laid down that the Home Office can publish rules called the immigration rules to decide specifically when somebody can enter the country, for how long, and on what basis. And those immigration rules, which really started in 1971, have grown over time. And the rules are divided in different sections, and each section relates to the different type of non-British national who wants to come into the UK. So, for example, Part 6 of the rules, Chapter 6, effectively, deals with certain types of immigrant who fall under the points-based scheme, whereby they have to satisfy certain points in order to come into the country.
Certain criteria.
Yeah. And those are, for example, in Part 6, international students, ministers of religion, people who work for international companies, and exceptional sportsmen. In Part 11 of the rules, those are the rules which govern when somebody should be allowed to stay in the country as a refugee. So that's a different type of applicant.
Right.
And the rules in Chapter 11 govern when somebody should be allowed, as I say, to stay here, because if they go back to their country of origin, they will be, so the applicant says, at risk of harm.
Yes.
So that deals with a different type of immigrant.
Right.
And then Chapter 13 of the rules, for example, deals with deportation. That is when a foreign national has come to the United Kingdom and has committed a crime, and the Home Office seek to deport that person back to their country of origin.
Yes.
So
different areas covering different aspects of immigration law for different types of applications of people coming into the country.
Exactly.
And you know, it's an expansive list, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not so sort of there's one, two and three.
No, that's
there's
right.
Lots of chapters, lots of areas. But essentially what we're saying is that immigration law is
the law that governs on what basis you can come here if you're not a UK national, and what basis you can stay here, live here, work here, etc.
Exactly.
Good.
And the rules really govern that. If the Home Office, applying their own rules, say, no, you can't come in, or no, you can't stay in the country any longer, there is a right of appeal in certain cases against that decision. And an appeal hearing will take place at a tribunal centre in the UK, and that is when barristers...
As a starting point.
Yeah, as a challenge to the Home Office if they have said no on paper.
Yes.
There will then be a hearing to decide whether or not the Home Office were right to say no, or they should have actually allowed that person to stay or to enter, and that is when barristers come in, because they argue... If they're for the client, why the Home Office were wrong. But then a barrister might be instructed by the Home Office and be saying the Home Office are absolutely right. And they've applied the rules correctly.
Yes.
And then the judge will make the decision.
Yes, well, that's really informative, and that's a good start to our discussion today. The next question, Alex, is, does immigration law protect all passport holders if they are in the UK with an immigration problem? So they have a passport, because we are aware that there are a large number of individuals who are in the UK with no passport, however they got here or whatever the situation was. We won't go into that, that's a different podcast, I think. But if they have a valid passport and they have an immigration problem, are they protected?
Well, I mean, if, say, a foreign national wants to stay in the United Kingdom, the first thing the Home Office will actually establish is who they are and where they come from. So if that first issue has not been resolved, that is a problem. There are different ways of establishing somebody's nationality and identity if the applicant doesn't have a passport, by going to the embassy of that country, which are usually based in London.
Yes.
But for the purposes of an immigrant wanting to stay in the country, identification of that person and their date of birth is essential in the first instance.
Yes.
But there are other ways. This is something that comes across. One comes across in asylum cases where somebody may have fled their country in quite serious circumstances,
yes,
and has actually arrived to the United Kingdom without their passport. The Home Office may be satisfied that that person is in fact a national of the claimed country, Iraq,
yes,
for example.
And a genuine case of an asylum seeker.
But on the point of identity, certain questions may be asked about the country of claimed origin by the Home Office to the applicant to determine whether or not that person is indeed, for example, from Iraq,
yes,
or for example, from Afghanistan,
yes,
or from Syria.
Yes.
And if that person can actually correctly explain, you know, their home area, their religion, certain laws in that country, the Home Office may be satisfied that that person is indeed of that nationality, even though that person doesn't actually have
any
a
written
passport.
Proof.
Yeah.
Yes, yes,
yeah,
in terms of a formal document.
Yeah, that's not uncommon. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes. Well, okay. Obviously, there's lots of questions going around in people's minds that are not UK nationals, that have been in the UK, be it from Europe or be it from outside of Europe, that have been here with permission to stay. And so during this time of, again, I refer to Brexit, because everybody feels like, lots of people feel like, certainly, that they're going to be booted out or something. So the next question, you know, is quite interesting, because it says, I've been living in the UK for over 5 years. Will I be able to apply for settlement in the UK? And I think, are we assuming here that that person is a European national?
Well, 5 years is relevant, actually, whether you are a non European national or you are a European national. Under the current EEA reflect EU law.
Okay.
Yep. 5 years is a relevant period of time whether you are an EU national from a European country or a non-EU national. Under the EEA regulations, which still apply until 2021, if you are from an EU country and you have lived in the UK for 5 years, exercising treaty rights, which basically means being economically active, looking for a job, getting a job, working. And you've done that for 5 years, you have a right of permanent residence. That's where the five-year period comes in.
Yeah,
if you're, say, from Italy or France. If you are non-EU and you have come to the UK and you've been here for 5 years, in accordance with the immigration rules governing family and private life for non-EU nationals, if you have satisfied the relevant criteria, for example, as a partner of a British citizen in this country, say, for example, somebody from Morocco has come to the United Kingdom because their husband is British, and they've lived here for 5 years, and during that period of time, they have satisfied all the immigration rules governing a partner of a foreign national. Generally speaking, and I stress generally speaking, in those circumstances, that person, the Moroccan wife, for example, would have a right to settlement after 5 years. So the five-year...
It's a key number.
It's a recognised number, whether you're from Europe coming into the UK under the EU law or non-European coming in under the immigration rules.
And having lived here for that period of time. Key, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is
five
really
is an important
is the
number.
Magic number.
That's
actually,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So we talk about the Home Office, and we talk about the Home Office because applications are made to the Home Office in lots of forms for the visas, etc. So what is meant by Home Office fees? Lots of people say, "Well, what's a Home Office fees? Why are there Home Office fees? What is meant by that?"
Whenever you, whoever you are, and you're seeking to come into the United Kingdom or to stay here for longer as a non-British national, you have to make an application. You have to, it's like a job application.
Yes, for a visa to get in.
You fill in a form.
Yes.
And you say who you are, where you live, and why you want to stay here or why you want to enter the country.
Yes.
It's like, it looks like a job application.
Yes.
And then when you submit that, you send that to the Home Office. In order for the application to be processed and considered by the Home Office, you have to pay a fee.
Yes, because somebody has to pay for it.
That's right.
Somebody has to pay for it, and that's why there is a fee to process your application, to look at it, to consider it, and to get it to the next stage.
That's right.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Okay, so we hear about the immigration health surcharge.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I first only heard about that last year myself.
Yes.
And you think, well, what is the immigration health surcharge? And obviously there's a fee to that. But let's just explain that. What is the immigration health surcharge? Why does that exist? What is it for? What's the purpose?
It exists. The rationale for the health care surcharge is that foreign nationals who are living in the UK should contribute to the running of the National Health Service.
Because they're going to use it potentially.
They may use it, yes. Anyone applying for leave to enter the United Kingdom or for leave to remain, and they are looking to be here for more than 6 months, are required to pay this health charge.
Now, at the moment, Alex, does that... At the moment, I say, because we've gone through Brexit earlier this year, but we're not actually out until 2021.
That's right.
Does that apply to non-EU nationals only, the IHS?
No. The IHS, strictly speaking, is something that falls under the immigration rules. So when you are making an application for leave to remain or leave to enter, which traditionally... are for non-EU nationals, but for those who are seeking to stay or come into this country under the immigration rules, which, as I say, govern non-EU nationals.
Yes.
When you make that application, when you put that application form into the Home Office,
yes,
at that stage, you pay the health charge.
So it's for non-EU nationals at the moment?
At the moment.
Obviously, I don't think we know what's going to happen to EU nationals after 2021. I think it's January when the UK formally completely comes out of the EU. Yeah. I don't think they've announced that yet, have they? What's going to happen there?
Yes, they have. The new rules governing entry for European nationals
after next January.
Yeah, that starts in January 2021.
Yes.
And the rules now, which give quite a large scope for a European national to come into the UK, you just have to be exercising treaty rights, being economically active.
Yes.
Those will change. The criteria will change from January 2021, and it will be more of a points-based scheme process.
Yes.
Reflecting the current criteria to an extent, which non-EU nationals have to satisfy.
Yes, I've seen that,
yeah.
But are they going to have to pay the immigration health surcharge, do we think? Do we know? As a European national, after January 2021...
Well,
coming in, do we know that bit?
I don't know if there is a specific provision for the healthcare surcharge. What there definitely is in there is a requirement for you to earn a certain amount of money,
yes,
in order for you to be economically self-sufficient.
Yeah,
and that is
in an employment on an employment basis in the UK.
Yeah,
so you're saying I'm coming in, but
yeah,
you need to say this is the job I'm coming to do.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the profession I'm in, and
yeah,
that has to have a certain salary band under the different brackets of which entry band you're coming in on.
Yeah.
And then it's decided from there. But
yeah,
we don't know whether they're going to say, right, whether you're, even if you're a European national coming into the UK after January 2021, you will still have to pay the immigration health surcharge or not.
Well, the health surcharge is £150 a year.
God, it's so minimal.
It's minimal. And I haven't seen any requirement under the new Brexit provisions taking into effect in January 2021 referring to a healthcare surcharge.
Yes.
My understanding is because the requirements in terms of finances are far more stringent, that is to actually show that you are going to be economically self-sufficient,
yes,
and not ergo overly reliant on the state.
Yes.
But whether there's a specific provision in respect to the healthcare surcharge,
we don't know.
I'm not entirely sure. But as I say, traditionally the health surcharge has been for those wanting to come into the country
outside of the
EU. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to touch on to Brexit,
yeah,
because why wouldn't we? I
mm-hmm.
think everybody and their cat has spoken about Brexit at some point. And one of the points, one of the questions that EU nationals have got at the moment, and it's been put through quite a few times on what are your most frequently asked questions, is how has Brexit affected citizens from the European Union currently living in the UK? So, for example, I'm a European citizen. Will I be able to remain in the UK after the UK completely comes out of the European Union in 2021? Now, I know that's been announced largely by the government, and
mm-hmm.
I think lots of people have been keeping track on that, because there was a worry that for some reason European nationals were going to be asked to leave if they hadn't
yeah.
sought to remain, you know, to remain, and things like that. And then there was the whole question of, well, oh goodness, what are all the UK nationals going to do that are living
mm-hmm.
and working in Europe? Are they mm-hmm. all going to be sent back? I mean, obviously, that's clearly not going to be the case.
Yeah. The EU settlement scheme, which has been in existence for a couple of years, allows EU nationals who are currently in the UK to remain in the United Kingdom. The settlement scheme provides for settled status for those EU nationals who have been in the UK already for 5 years.
Yes.
So if somebody from Poland or France or Italy have been here as a treaty worker exercising treaty rights for 5 years, they will be given settled status. And that reflects the regulations we looked at.
But they have
earlier.
To apply for that, Alex,
yeah, you have
right?
to apply for
it. You have
that.
To apply yeah. for it. So don't assume
no.
I'm an EU national. I've been here for the magic number of 5 years already. Before when? January 2021,
no, the cut-off point for the application under the EU settlement scheme is the 30th of June 2021.
Right. Yeah. So everybody's still... Right, I see. Yeah. So it's not the actual month or date that the UK is coming out of the EU, which is January 2021. Yeah. They've extended that by five months.
That's the deadline for making the application.
If you've been here for 5 years at least, from that date that you're making the application, to say I want to have a settled status in the UK.
Yeah.
And what if you haven't been here for 5 years?
Then it's still a relatively positive situation. You can apply for pre-settled status. So say you've been in the UK for 3 years, you can apply for pre-settled status, which gives you settled status 2 years thereafter.
Right.
But the important thing is that you have, for those who have been in the UK for less than 5 years, if you make the application for settled status, you then would have to stay in the UK for another 2 years in order to reach the 5 year period.
And that's key, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you can't say, right, I've only been here for 2 years, let me apply for pre-settled status as a European national. I'll then go back home to France, Italy, or wherever, and then I'll come back after it's been 2 years and get my settled status. You can't do that.
No.
You have to remain here for 2 years on a pre-settled status?
No. Any EU national who applies under the settlement scheme, if they've been here for 6 months, for example, they can apply for pre-settled status, but then they would have to be here thereafter.
2 years.
No, they would then have to thereafter be here for 4.5 years to have the 5 year period satisfied.
I understand.
To then
you
give
have
them,
to make up the 5 years.
That's it.
Right. So it's not necessarily 2 years, no matter how long you've been here, under 5 years. It's basically you have to make those 5 years up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. That's actually clearer for me now.
Yeah.
That's interesting, actually. And I think it's a very key point because, again, some people think, well, I've got pre-settled status, so I can go and live there a little bit and live over there a little bit outside the UK. You have to live here, be economically viable for a whole 5 years, and then you can apply for your settled status.
That's it.
Right.
And if you've already been here for 5 years, even after the Brexit decision, you can make an application for settled status, and all things being equal, you would get that.
Right. Okay.
But an important date, as I say, the application deadline is the 30th of June 2021. And it only applies to applicants, EU applicants, who have lived in the UK up to the 31st of December 2020.
That's very interesting. So if you said, OK, I've been here till the 1st of January 2021, I want to make an application for settled status because I've been here for 5 years, you can do
that. You would qualify.
But if you've only lived here till June 2020...
Yep.
Or any date before the 31st of December 2020, and you then want to make an application because you went back home for a few months, say you lived here till June 2020, you went back home for 4 months, you thought, right, let me make the application, you won't be able to because you've not been living here.
Yeah, you should be based in the UK. It's for those EU nationals who are living in the UK up to the 31st of December 2020.
Right. Yeah. Goodness. Mm. This is, I mean, there's so many variations and it's quite interesting, and you must be really busy right now, Alex, because clearly, you know, the change of laws are actually big changes in the laws in relation to immigration. I think it's immigration law is probably seeing the biggest changes than any other area of law in the next, you know, in the last 12 months and then the next 24.
Yeah, and I mean, even over the last 10 years, there have been quite a lot of amendments to rights of appeals. And it is an ever-changing area of law.
Yes.
So, yeah, one of the reasons it interests me.
Well, I can completely understand that, actually. And that is all we have time for, sadly. And I know we have a list of questions to run through, which we will do on part two.
Yeah.
So thank you ever so much for joining us. Don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes.